Hi.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan M. Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Thank you for showing up. That's the first step, right? Especially if you don't want to be a bad boss. Welcome. Today's Work Trends event is about a topic that touches all of us at some point in our work careers. Very few of us have gone unscathed from the horrible boss or weird coworkers that make you want to run screaming. I know I've been there. I felt that both personally in my own career as well as in my days as a recruiter, recruiting for cultures of all sizes. So what does this have to do with us? More than two-thirds of American workers are just putting their time in at their jobs. Their lack of engagement in the job or the organization can often be attributed to their boss's poor leadership skills. And I think unless people can provide inspiration and instill dedication, productivity, we're going to continue with this downward dive, everybody. As much as I like to talk about, yes, we can focus on culture, yes, leadership matters, it's not going to matter when we look at this data. The data is still pretty scary, actually. So with us today is someone who spent a lot of time trying to figure out what this conundrum is in our workplaces. She is awesome. She's here today to share some ideas on how we can help leadership be successful in spite of themselves, right? So welcome, Vicki Oliver.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Everyone, Vicki's kind of a big deal. She is a leading career development expert and a multi-best-selling author of 5 books, including, this is my favorite one, by the way, Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. What's not to love about that, everybody? Can we send a shout-out on Work Trends? Just that alone just completely made my day. 301 Smart Answers to Tough Interview Questions, 301 Smart Answers to Tough Business Etiquette Questions, and she's named the top 10 list of best books for HR interview prep. She's very sought after, and so we're very lucky to have her here. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. I love the Bad Bosses book because I feel like everybody in the world has a bad boss, a crazy coworker that they've dealt with, or an office idiot.
It's just hysterical. I'm like, that's the best headline ever. You win. You won. So listen, tell our listening audience, if they haven't heard of you, Vicki, a little bit more about yourself.
Okay. I live and write in Manhattan. I am a career expert, and I help people with their issues at the workplace, of which there are probably many. I started by writing a book about job hunting called 301 Smart Answers to Tough Interview Questions, and basically made myself available to readers to answer their questions. I did 301, but if they had a 302nd one, I would answer their question for free. And through that research, I learned a tremendous amount about the workplace throughout the United States, and that's what I write about.
And what led you to become an author? Tell us just a little bit more about your career background.
Okay. I started my career in the advertising business, and I began as a receptionist, and I grew to be a creative director in the advertising business. And at the time that I was in the business was like a revolving door, and I was always looking for a job. And between looking for a job and then later hiring people to work for me, I learned a tremendous amount about job hunting. And about 1,000 times I said to myself, you know, I should write a book about job hunting. And one day I did.
And you're talking advertising in Manhattan, by the way? I mean, let's get some context around
this. Advertising in Manhattan,
yeah.
Which, you know, if for those who don't live here, it's very, very, sort of competitive and difficult. to work in that environment here in New York City. And I just decided that I was learning so much about job hunting by being in the advertising business that I should write about it. And that's what happened. I wrote about it, and eventually I persuaded a publishing company to publish it.
And is are you full-time? Are you a full-time author now, or were you splitting
your time? I am a full-time
career author.
I'm a full-time author and a career consultant, meaning I give seminars about job hunting on branding yourself, in-person networking, and I also have clients who I work through problems that they may have in terms of job hunting, branding themselves, the same topics.
So tell us then, Vicki, what are the keys for how companies should better engage workers in the big picture of each task or project? Let's start there.
Okay. I personally think it's very important to, if you are a leader, if you have employees, know that they don't just want a job. They want career fulfillment. And it's your job to help them get that. And part of the way that you can help them is by sharing your vision with them. And you know, share your passion and give them goals and benchmarks.
And why is it so hard for so many leaders, right? I know it's a conundrum. I know, like, you and I are scratching our heads. Everybody else is too. We're like, why is this so difficult?
I think it's difficult because a lot of times people are promoted based on a certain task that they do well, and they're kind of promoted beyond the level of their competence. Like, you might be a good researcher, but that doesn't mean you know how to manage people. And maybe you get to a certain level through that one task, research, because you're great at research. But then they give you a team of 25 people, you know, and their politics involved, their egos involved. You know, every business basically is a people business. And I think that most of us, we really don't learn how to set expectations or deal with people when they are reporting to us. We don't learn that as a task, and it's hard.
I love it. I love it. You're like, it's hard, darn it. You know, I want to talk about Trump, but not right now with you, right? Could you imagine? Could you imagine if we're going there? Because we might later. But anyway,
here I am in New York City.
I know. I hear you. So listen, tell us what principles then. And we can use Trump as an example if you want to have some fun with this. But what are the principles of common business decorum most people apply to in leadership roles? What are the themes that you see?
I feel, as I said, that every business is actually a people business, and therefore it doesn't work to close yourself off from those people. You can't lead by shutting the door and ordering people around through emails. You know, you have to be there for the people who work for you. Like, leadership is a privilege. It's not just a right. It's a privilege.
Yeah, and I mean, and the other thing is, Vicki, I think so often, and I know I have fallen prey to this myself, you send an email has a certain flavor to it, and sometimes your message doesn't even get put across right, right?
Right,
it's
exactly.
Like,
and there's another book
this is
I
all
wrote.
About contact. Somebody's reading my exclamation point as I'm angry or I'm excited. You don't have any context on email. That's the difficult part, right? And so
I wrote a different book called 301 Smart Answers to Tough Business Etiquette Questions. And in that book, I talk quite a lot about communications and emails in particular. The problem is it's very hard for people to read a tone of an email. And also, if there is a dispute in the email, a lot of times the cordial tone just erodes. It's the first thing to go. And that's kind of a problem. That's a problem. And the other thing is email is a legal document. So once you're in an email war with someone, it's basically there forever.
Yeah. Oh, dear. You know?
Yes. It's a problem.
Is anyone else on work? I want to know if anyone else, we should uncover this on Twitter. Is anyone in an email war right now as we speak? Utilize the hashtag work trends. We want to hear from you. Because, I mean, really, and you may not, the other person on the other side of this communication may not be in war with you. That's the silly or scary part, right? So here is the topic that makes me cringe, right? Tell us how micromanaging leads to costly employee disengagement. Talk to us about any data, any case studies you might have in what you're doing day to day. Let's talk about it.
Okay. So the problem with micromanaging people, again, this is my opinion. The problem with it is it's basically saying to your people, I don't trust you. I don't trust you. What are you doing at 3 o'clock? What are you doing at 3:05? What are you doing at 3:10? You are putting it out there that you do not trust your people. And people don't like to work for people who look over their shoulders. The other thing is that style of management is about 40 or 50 years old. It's just not in keeping with, like, management today, where there are, I mean, a long time ago, 40, 50 years ago, there were layers and layers and layers and layers of people in companies. And so, therefore, there would be some people who were there to micromanage, you know, make sure the employees get the work done on time. Today, that's not how it works today. You know, all the layers have been cut. And people have to do multiple tasks that they didn't have to do before. And one of those tasks is organizing themselves. So they have to be organized to retain their job. So if somebody's over you all the time, like, what are you doing? What are you working on? Oh, we're late, you know. It's just a distraction to doing good work.
I bet that's never, ever happened to you in your advertising career. Can you imagine?
Oh, no,
I mean, you must have been
like, not.
I know. You never had anyone talking to you about deadlines, ever, right?
You know, it's not discussing the deadlines. Discussing the deadlines is essential. It is micromanaging is when you are leaning over somebody, asking every 3 minutes, like, how is that deadline coming on? How are you doing on this project? You know, do you need my help? Do you need my supervision? It's that kind of, like, nagging. Kind of like a nagging mother, you know? And a lot of employees do not respond well to this.
Well, you talk a lot about the benefits of letting people fail. Let's talk about that a bit.
Right. So in an environment, some work environments are risk-averse, and some of work environments are pro-risk. And the benefit of letting people fail is to say, we have a pro-risk environment here. We want you to do well. And sometimes when you stretch, you have to take a risk. And sometimes when you risk, you fail. So if by allowing employees the freedom to fail, it allows them to stretch more. If everyone is terrified to fail, they can't stick their necks out. They can't try. They can't try for that big idea that's never been done before because they're too afraid to fail. So if you want big results, you know, you have to allow people who work for you to take some risks and be okay with them taking the risks.
Well, see, that second part, though, right? We're not always okay with it. I think we want to be okay with it because we think that's a cool thing to do for culture purposes.
Right.
But in the end, you know, sometimes employees are on the short end of that stick. Let's be honest.
Right. Right. I mean, a lot of times there'll be, you know, a culture and it says, okay, we are okay with people taking risks. But in the reality, they're not. You know, the end of the year comes along, goals weren't met, you know, heads get
chopped.
There
you go. Yep. It's a revenue game, right? Where is the revenue?
You know, at the end of the day,
where is the profit?
Yeah, and you also, to have that kind of a culture, you also need to be able to employ the kinds of people who will take risks, you know? You can't just suddenly say it's okay to fail and have a whole mess of people that are working for you who are terrified to fail. So it becomes like self-perpetuating. If you put it out as a mission, then you also have to hire those people. I think of it as they're more entrepreneurial within the corporation. You need to hire people who think of themselves as entrepreneurs, even though they're working for you.
Mm-hmm. So what have you found to be the things that keep employees interested and concerned in their jobs? And are these things commonplace in today's work world or coveted maybe by a few select companies at this point?
I think innovation is hugely important. Like if you look at some of the great companies today, you know, like Amazon is a great company, and look at how they're always innovating, you know. I mean, they're not just selling books, right? They're now they have stores, you know. They're always trying new things, and I think innovation is like
a
key.
Well, hold on, though. I'm gonna disrupt you for a minute.
Okay.
I don't think everybody thinks Amazon is a great place to work, though. I have intel that tells me otherwise. I remember when Amazon, the very early days of Amazon, and I can tell you as a fact, I know people who have worked inside Amazon who think it's actually a pretty crappy culture. So, again, we need to be careful equating who's in the news, which brands are in the news, looking at revenue numbers. I suspect you're I mean, what makes you say that? That's what I want to unfold with you right now.
Well,
what makes
because
you say Amazon is great?
Because companies that innovate tend to do well and also capture the imagination quite well, you know?
Right.
Apple, Amazon, you know, to name two.
Mm-hmm.
Google,
mm-hmm.
to name three, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and are pushing boundaries in very, very interesting ways. And I think in any company, you want to try to encourage people to take the blinders off, you know, and try to,
yeah.
you know, I hate this cliche, but to think outside the box.
Oh, it's so cliched, though.
I know, I just said that.
A new phrase. Something new, please. Come on.
Oh, on the top of my head, creativity, vision.
Ooh, there we go. Yeah.
Walking out on a limb and trying something different.
Vicki, I just want to clarify my Amazon comment. The whole point of me making that comment is to say, yes, I think the culture is innovative, but the leaders, people who are hiring, may not always rise to that occasion. So, you know, there's often that disconnect. And again, the larger the brand, the more disconnect there could be, right, sometimes. So it's
I'll take a case from my old advertising career.
Yeah.
When I was in advertising, like, for example, Shiat Day was always doing fantastic creative, you know, like wonderful television commercials that people were, but stunned people, right? And they were always and then they were the first people in advertising to say, let's take the doors down, okay? So they had offices with doors and walls. They said, let's take the doors and walls down.
Then after that,
they said, oh, you know, we don't really need people to work inside the office 5 days a week, at least 8 hours a day, probably more like 12 over there. Let's have, you know, roving people who can work from their own homes, you know, flexible hours. Like, they tried all kinds of very, very, very interesting innovations.
Yeah. And
now, I never worked at Shiat Day, but I'm just saying, you know, from the outside, that was like, it was like, wow, you know, look at what they're doing.
Give us some historical context. When was this, that this company was doing that?
Oh, this was like in the 1990s. They were, you know, doing all this
stuff,
and they still are. I mean,
right.
They still are.
Well, so many brands
are, you know,
are,
just
right?
sometimes just trying things. Now, I did work at an ad agency that that took down the doors. I did not think it worked at that particular place, you know. Like those of us who had doors and windows, which I did, it's like suddenly, you know, your door was removed.
Yeah.
And propped up on the side.
Everyone,
I kid you not.
In.
Right?
We're toasting marshmallows. Yeah, no, I know. It, you're right. I mean, it doesn't work for every culture. It really
doesn't.
Right, it doesn't
work for every culture. You know, that was a sort of a more conservative ad agency that I, you know, worked at, and they took down the doors, and they left them propped up. Like, in your office, you'd also have this detached door propped up against the wall. It was kind of, like, ugly and frustrating at the same time, you know?
Hilarious.
So it doesn't always work, but you know, if you like I said, if you give the people the freedom to fail, later you can say, you know what, taking down the doors really didn't work. Let's put them back up again.
That's hysterical. And you know what you're communicating, and communication is love, right?
Right.
I've been saying that for a while now, and I really, truly believe that. And it relates to employee engagement, obviously. So
yes.
This is something I personally can't stand, and I have a sense you might feel the same way. If people tell me they're going to do something, I expect a level of follow-through, right? Call me crazy. So what
I think
you're
absolutely
about, you know?
But as a leader, you need to tell them when, but you don't have to nag them about it, you know? Like, once should be enough. Like, I expect you to follow through with me in the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So
and then try to control yourself to not say after a week, how's it going? How's it going? Can I help? Do you need help? You know? That kind of chirping, I think it just really hurts and unravels employee relations.
Mm-hmm. So what are the expected business outcomes when leaders flounder like this on their position, or maybe they don't make good on their promises?
So I think that is a huge issue. I think it can be a real problem if people suddenly don't believe in their leaders, in their leadership at the office. You know, I think that can be a problem. I mean, sometimes, you know, the CEO must go, you know, to put it mildly. Sometimes that has to happen. It depends on the reason why, if a goal isn't met, you know. Like, there could be macro forces going on, you know. It depends on what is going on. That's the short answer.
Yeah, right. Well,
you know, like
if somebody
just failed to bring in a piece of business this year, well, maybe they can bring the piece of business in next year. But if let's say that company merged with another company and that's the reason for the disruption, it might take longer, you know, to sort it out. It just depends on what's going on.
Got it. So this is something we talked about a few weeks ago here on Work Trends, empathy, right? It seems to be a hot topic for people, you know, interested or people who care about workplace culture, right? It's definitely a hot one. Tell us, in your view, why empathy should be considered a strength and not a weakness, and why so often it is considered a weakness. And what are some real life studies or stories
you mean
that you can
efficacy?
Tell us about
you mean like when you say efficacy, you mean like just being efficient?
Empathy.
Oh,
D-word.
Empathy. I'm sorry. I didn't
empathy.
Hear you. I could not hear you. Okay. you know, I think in the old days, like 50 years ago, like a leader at the workplace would basically say, this is what I want done, and people would just kind of do it, you know. And those days are like just so long past. So now people who are working for somebody, they want to be appreciated, they want to be listened to, they want their own ideas to have value. It's not just like the days of being a worker drone are so over.
I know.
And so sometimes, though, in having ideas, you know, the ideas aren't maybe that realistic, right? People may have ideas, but not every idea is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I
You're
think
kidding.
A good leader knows how to listen, encourage the development, like brainstorming and the development of ideas, but also knows how to sort of lead people to the right solution amidst the ideas. Like,
Making people feel badly, silly.
Right, or marginalized.
You know.
Right. Now, it used to be the case, like with advertising, you know, we would brainstorm and it would be like, okay, there are no dumb ideas in the original brainstorm, right? And one thing is to just get all the ideas out there with no judgment. Write them all down, you know, have brainstorming sessions and don't put down people for their ideas. Because there will be some crazy ideas out there that just, you know, make no sense. But write them all down, and then there'll be like a sorting through process on the ideas, sort through the ideas, and then wean them down. But you need to be able to encourage people. Like, the person that came up with the silliest idea today may be the person tomorrow who comes up with a fantastic idea that you can utilize. So you want to make sure that, you know, when you're paring them down, you're paring down the idea, not the person.
Mm-hmm.
Really
That's
important.
That's so important.
So important.
It's so important.
It's the work product, not the person. So you don't want to dismiss
also,
the person.
Yeah.
You don't want to jocularly dismiss the person.
Right. And it's also about why. You know, empathy to me is really going that level deeper with people and understanding their lens, their point of view, and what they've experienced in their life or career. You know, I think
right.
So oftentimes people don't take the time to really understand the why and the context. And to me, that's empathy.
Yeah, right. And I think that might come down to maybe not knowing, like, the person that well or, like, their background or possibly where they work before. You know, the ideas that person is trying to carry forward. They may not, you know, they're so often, it's just so simple to say no, you know, next.
Yeah.
When in fact, it might be, like, better to say, oh, that's interesting. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. There's something that I absolutely love that you talk about, and that's how leaders need to develop a reputation for reasonableness. What
yes.
does this mean? Tell our audience.
I think reasonableness means being able to listen to different viewpoints. Listen to what your people come forward with and not just have your own idea that is completely inflexible. It's just realizing that together you're going to build a better product, whatever the product is, you know, and that if it were just you, you could be sitting in a garage doing it. But there's a reason
right.
why you have other people around you. You know, because together you're going to build a better product. You're going to wean ideas. You're going to come up with the best solutions together, and together you're going to move forward. It's very difficult to do with certain personality
yeah.
types, realizing that other people might have brilliant ideas besides yourself.
Do you think maybe Trump falls into that category?
I never like to talk about particular people in politics, but, you know, I feel like sometimes learning from other people besides yourself, you know, it's just getting beyond like a culture of narcissism and trying to work together with other people who will disagree with you, but sometimes through the disagreements, you can arrive at a better solution.
Communication is love, right?
Well, you know, at least, if not love, at least listening, you know,
like.
Listening well,
mm-hmm.
And just not being reactive is another, I think, a core strength.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to listen and say, you know, I'm not sure about that, but I will sleep
yeah.
on it and I will think about it.
Yeah, right. Right. No, that makes so much sense. Listen, we are down to two more minutes left. Do you want to tell us anything in closing, Vicky? It was such a pleasure to speak with you today. And, you know, I know you're going to join us on the Twitters and you're going to have some fun using that hashtag work trends. In closing, any last items you want to share with our listening audience? Where can people find you? What's your
up
to
okay.
in the next couple months?
My name is Vicky
yeah.
Oliver. My website is VickyOliver.com, pretty simple, and that's Vicky with a Y. I've written 5 business books, and I think I'm pretty accessible. So after the Twitter chat today, if somebody wants to reach out to me, you know, and email me questions, I'm happy to talk with them offline.
Listen, you rock, and thanks for being here today. I appreciate it. Let's take this conversation on over to Twitter.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for having me, Megan. And now I'm moving to Twitter.